Here's the lineup for the Art Theater this week. Son of Saul will continue for another week in a searing drama about a concentration camp inmate tasked with burning the dead. However, he discovers the body of his young son and must choose between participating in the clandestine uprising or securing a proper Jewish burial for his child. Having multiple screenings and starring Maggie Smith is The Lady in the Van, playing daily, where a man forms an unexpected bond with a transient woman living in her car that's parked in his driveway. On Monday, tonight, at 7:30 p.m. for theater members only, is Thebe, a rivetingly lean and resonant coming-of-age tale being described as the first Bedouin Western. Mustang will have multiple screenings in a movie directed by Turkish-born director Deniz Erguven. The film is set in a remote Turkish village and depicts life of five young orphan sisters and challenges they face growing up as girls in a conservative society. And finally, for a donation, tomorrow, Tuesday, March 1st, you can see Nina Paley's Seder Masochism, a work in progress that will also offer a post-show question and answer. For all the current information, dates, times, and movie summaries, you can find it online at www.arttheater.coop/full-schedule. Today's Disability Beat is sponsored by our community partner, Jets Pizza. Jets uses only premium ingredients, including dough made fresh daily. Jets Pizza stores are located at 512 South Neal Street in Champaign. Their number 217-352-3333 and 1907 West Springfield Avenue. Their number 217-352-9992. You can order online at jetspizza.com. Disability Beat is also sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law at 217-384-1111 for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
My name is Ann Russell from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. You are listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Michael Johnson and Tara Wicki of the Illinois Self-Advocacy Alliance on Operation Community Access. But first, disability news for the week of February 29th, 2016, from Disability Scoop. Federal education officials want states to take action to ensure that minority students aren't overrepresented in special education. The U.S. Department of Education said new figures show that disparities persist in the nation's schools, with minority students in many districts far more likely to be identified as having disabilities and more frequently facing suspensions and other discipline. However, despite requirements under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act to flag such issues, they often go unnoticed. According to Acting U.S. Secretary of Education John King, quote, "We have a moral and a civil rights obligation to ensure that every student has the opportunity to succeed regardless of background or whether the student has a disability. But the data we see makes it very clear that we as a country are not living up to the intent of the law," end quote. Now the agency is looking to change that trend with a proposed rule that would require states to use a standardized approach to assess representation in special education across racial and ethnic groups. In cases where school districts have a significantly disproportionality, the rule would allow more flexibility in how they use funding allocated under IDEA. Currently, districts with disparities must use 15% of their IDEA funds for early intervening services for students who are not yet identified as having disabilities beginning in kindergarten. But under the proposal, schools could use that money to serve kids with and without disabilities starting in preschool. King said, quote, "This effort is not about reducing the number of children who are identified as having a disability. It's a matter of making sure the right services are getting to the right children in the right way and making certain students' needs are properly addressed," end quote. The proposed rule will be up for public comment before being finalized. Under a new proposal, the federal government would be required to take sweeping steps to utilize affirmative action to increase the number of workers with disabilities in its ranks. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or EEOC, said last week that it is proposing a rule that would require federal agencies to work toward a 12% workforce representation rate for people with disabilities and a 2% representation rate for those with targeted or severe conditions, including intellectual disability. Moreover, the rule calls for government agencies to provide personal assistance to employees with disabilities who need help with eating, using the restroom, and other basic human functions while at work. Said EEOC Commissioner Chai R. Feldblum, who led the group that developed the proposal, quote, "This rule can be a game changer. Since 2013, federal contractors have been required to meet goals for the employment of individuals with disabilities. EEOC's proposed rule will hold the federal government to an even higher standard, particularly with regard to hiring people with targeted disabilities and providing personal assistance services," end quote. The hiring goals would apply to all levels of federal employment, the EEOC said. If agencies fail to achieve the stated minimums, the rule would require them to take various steps to increase their hiring and retention of people with disabilities, depending on the particular circumstance. Federal agencies already must have affirmative action plans for hiring people with disabilities under Section 501 of the Rehabilitation Act. Such plans are subject to approval from the EEOC. However, no single rule has ever outlined what those policies should look like. The EEOC said it is attempting to clarify expectations with its current proposal, which is up for public comment through April 25th. A genetic abnormality in the brain could be integral to Down syndrome, researchers say in a finding that could point to new treatment options for those with the chromosomal disorder. Though it's long been thought that many biological changes associated with Down syndrome occur prenatally, the study published online last week in the journal Neuron suggests that alterations in the brain continue to present throughout life. For the study, researchers looked at gene expression in the brains of individuals with and without Down syndrome at various ages, ranging from mid-fetal development to adulthood. They found that the establishment of white matter, which insulates nerve fibers in the brain, changes as people with Down syndrome age. Said Tariq Hader, an associate professor of anatomy and neurobiology at Boston University School of Medicine, who worked on the study, quote, "This discovery of the genetic changes that alter communication within the brain uncovered a completely new target for therapies in the brains of people with Down syndrome," end quote. Though the hallmark of Down syndrome is having an extra 21st chromosome, the researchers found that more than 1,300 genes were disrupted in those with the condition, nearly all of which were outside of that chromosome, indicating that the effects are widespread. Specifically, researchers said defective myelination could be at least partly responsible for intellectual disability in those with Down syndrome. Myelin coats nerve fibers and allows for transmission of nerve impulses. Myelin-regenerating drugs are already available to treat other conditions like multiple sclerosis, and such treatments may benefit people with Down syndrome, the study authors indicate. And finally, a major clothing designer is launching a line of apparel just for children with special needs. Tommy Hilfiger released a line of adaptive clothing on its website last week. The 22-piece children's offering is comprised of items that look just like clothing in the company's regular spring collection, but include magnets, Velcro, and other modifications to allow for easy on and easy off for kids with disabilities. All of the items are priced the same as the versions for typically developing kids, the company said. For the clothing line, Tommy Hilfiger collaborated with the nonprofit Runway of Dreams. Mindy Shire founded the group, which works to increase the availability of fashionable clothing for kids with disabilities after adapting jeans for her son Oliver, who has a rare form of muscular dystrophy and wears leg braces. Tommy Hilfiger's new adaptive clothing collection includes pants with adjustable length legs, fasteners that use Velcro and magnets, and other modifications while retaining the style of the company's mainstream clothing. According to Shire, quote, every detail was considered so the clothing is not only functional, but looks exactly the same as the Tommy Hilfiger kids collection, end quote. Beyond their work with Tommy Hilfiger, officials with Runway of Dreams said they are looking to work with other brands and designers to make adaptive clothing available for people of all ages with different abilities. And that's the news for this week. Are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nyswander, and this is Disability Beat. I'm joined today by two guests on the phone, both from the Illinois Self-Advocacy Alliance, a group that's been doing a lot of great stuff for several years now, and I'm happy to welcome Michael Johnson and Tara Wickey. Hello to both of you.
Hi.
Hello.
So, Tara, let me start with you. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell a little bit about the Alliance itself and what that is. And then that's for people who maybe have not heard you being interviewed on the show before, which you have. And then, Michael, I'm going to ask you to do the same. Introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the project that you're now working on. All right? So, Tara, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Tara Wickey, and I am the community organizer with the Alliance. And for those of you who don't know what the Alliance is, it's a network of self-advocacy groups and allies in the state of Illinois who care about self-advocacy. So we have 25 member groups that we work directly with. So each group has a point of contact that meets with them pretty regularly to help them through any challenges they may have. We have lots of events that go on all year, like our rally and our leadership training. And right now we're working on a really fun campaign called Operation Community Access. And Michael can tell you all about that.
So, Michael, introduce yourself to the listeners first.
Hello, my name is Michael Johnson. I'm from the Ark of the Quad Cities. And I'm going, and like Kara said, we are working on a campaign called Operation Community Access. And it's about trying to get people with disabilities to have more choices in what they want to do during the day. Instead of doing just day programs, they can do different things like volunteer, music, and artwork.
Okay.
The Alliance is also working on a petition to, and they want people to sign this petition, and it's for Operation Community Access, and it will be given to Director Greg Benton in our upcoming rally in this summer.
In when is your rally?
This summer.
Our rally is this summer. It's on June 28th.
So people have a little bit of time to prepare and get information about how to participate in that. So how, tell us a little bit more about what you're asking for as far as Operation Community Access. Obviously, lots of people with disabilities live in group homes and work in sheltered workshops. And so their lives are pretty isolated from the typical community. What is the Alliance thinking would be a better option? And if you want to give some specific examples, that would be great.
Yeah, so it's, this all started in January of 2015 when we conducted a survey with self-advocates, and we asked them what they wanted to do during the day. And what we knew that was some, we already knew that some people really liked the workshop, developmental training, and some didn't. And a lot of people were saying that they wanted more choice. And so we really needed to collect that data to have the numbers. And so when we got the surveys back, overwhelmingly people said that they wanted choice. They wanted, you know, opportunities to do the workshop or not. They wanted opportunities, like Michael said, to do music, artwork, volunteer, take classes, you know, develop other skills, job skills. So, you know, that was kind of what we were hearing from people. And so we wanted to create a way to make that happen. And so the reason that we're doing petitions is because we know it's important and we want to tell the state that it's important. And so with the flexible day services waiver requirement by the feds in March of 2017, everything has to change with the waiver anyway. And so we're hoping that we can kind of piggyback on that and make sure that self-advocates have their voice heard so that when the requirements are met and things are changed in the waiver, their voice will be heard. So with petitions, we're hoping that people, anyone can sign a petition. You can access them on our website at selfadvocacyalliance.org. And basically you're just saying that you support flexible day services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to have more flexibility in choosing what they do during the day.
Okay.
So that's kind of what we're asking of individuals. But then we also have a form for allies to partner with us. So, you know, like the University of UIC signed one today. So anyone, any agency, group, local business can sign on and say that they support this.
I see. So how many signatures are you hoping to get on your list? How many allies do you hope to recruit?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we are hoping to get 1,000 petitions signed by individuals, and we have about 355 right now, so we're in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
We still have a couple months. And then in terms of allies, we're hoping to get around 40 to 50, and we're already at 15, and we just started with the allies. And so we do have some time, and I think it's really important, and it's really what self-advocates want. So, you know, there's no reason that we won't meet, you know, we'll definitely meet our numbers.
Yeah.
We're excited.
I think as people find out more and more about what the Alliance does, that there should be a lot more support.
Exactly.
For the work that you're doing. So, Michael, tell us a little bit about what your life is like right now and how you hope that this Operation Community Access could make it better.
Yeah. So right now I live in a group home.
Mm-hmm.
and I work in the day program. And with this petition that we're having people sign, and with the, like Tara said, the waiver, I'm hoping that I will get more opportunities to work in the community or even volunteer. I mean, yeah, the day program is nice and whatnot. It's nice to go maybe once or twice a week to see my friends and, you know, catch up on gossip.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a good way to for me to get out in the community and learn different skills.
Right, and you want to get out there and,
that I already have.
And you want to actually get out there and maybe earn some real money, because in the day program you're not making any money, or at least very, very, very little, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of a job do you think you'd like to do if you were able to find something that was the perfect job for you out in the community?
I like to work with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that could, you know, make me work with my hands and get me dirty.
You're like getting dirty, huh? Well, that should qualify you for a lot of stuff, I would think. And what do you like to do in your free time? If you were going to volunteer for something, what would that be?
I like doing events for like the Speak Up and Speak Out rallies and stuff.
Yeah, those are fun.
So things like that of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And for fun, what do you like to do?
For fun, I mostly read. I'm a big reader.
Okay.
I like to read and play sports.
What's your favorite sport?
Basketball and football.
Ah, okay. So you have a couple. That's great. So when you do the presentation of this petition to Director Fenton at the end of June when you have your rally, what do you hope he's going to do with it?
He's going to see these names and take it seriously,
mm-hmm.
and see that we really want this, not just because it's a waiver, but because we feel very strongly about this.
Terry, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, you know, I think he has a great point, but yeah, we do want him to care about this, and it is important. So what we know is that 13 states are already doing community access within their waiver. It's written into their waiver. So we know it's doable. We already have agencies in Illinois right now that are doing this very thing within the funding stream that currently exists. And it's really about creating this awareness within the culture of agencies and really listening to what self-advocates want, you know, and there are ways for this to be a priority. And so, you know, thinking creatively and strategically and making small incremental changes is really important. It's not just about, you know, it has to happen because of the waiver, but it should happen because this is what self-advocates want.
Absolutely.
And that's our job, is to make sure that their voice is heard. And, you know, they're the customer, they're the client. So, you know, the agency's responsibility is to provide that service.
And what this really is doing in my mind is it's changing the perception that the state of Illinois and providers as a whole do things for people with disabilities. They set up programs for them and mm-hmm. they bus them to the programs, and that's the kind of model that's been set up. And what this Operation Community Access is doing is kind of turning that on its ear and saying, this is what people with disabilities want and need, and how can mm-hmm. we work together to provide that?
Uh-huh. Exactly. So, and I think even beyond that, it's not just what are we going to do with people during the day, it's how do we empower them to be self-sufficient, whether it's learning a new skill that's going to help them get a job, or it's something that's going to fulfill their emotional needs or their social needs. So really addressing more of a full life perspective, I think that's really what this is about as well. And how do we encourage agencies to take on that approach?
Yeah, and I think the other challenge is that there are a lot of people out there who that kind of support is going to be actually much less expensive for the state of Illinois over the long haul, because people oftentimes are much more capable than they're given credit for. And it sounds like, Michael, that you're one of those people. You're very capable of expressing yourself and doing lots of things, whereas there might be other folks out there who have a lot more needs, whether intellectual needs or communication needs or physical needs, but that the state and providers perceive that those folks might need to have a lot more expensive supports. Do you have any proposals to or answers to that concern?
Like you said, yes, there are a lot of people who are more than capable of being able to learn new skills, as like myself. And then there are some who can't, and they need that. They need that extra service. But for those who can, we would like to have that chance to show the skills that we do have, but also learn some new skills. And we're hoping that with this waiver and with this petition signing, that the director would see this and be like, and we'll talk to the government, the governor, and whatnot, and try to get this into motion so that people who do want to go and work in the community instead of in a factory, instead of a workshop, can have that opportunity to learn new skills, to be, you know, a better person.
Great answer. Tara, you have anything else to add there?
I think just that we all know that people with disabilities are, you know, just over their lifespan, they're just put into boxes, and people like to assume, not like to, but people just assume what they can and can't do based on what they see in front of them. And I think this, you know, this goes to show that we really want people to have choice. We want them to say what their thoughts are, what their feelings are, and what they want. And they should be able to self-direct, especially during their day. So if they want to learn about art and they want to learn about music or they want to volunteer, they should be able to do that. And I think creating a marketplace where people don't have to just go to the agency that's nearest them, or because there's only one within 100 miles, you know, creating that, like, there should be some competition, I think, that, you know, agencies should have a little more accountability, and, you know, people should have more choice when it comes to what they're going to do during the day.
That is a really great point. And I think that there are a lot of folks out there in the community as a whole who aren't engaged in the disability community, who totally don't understand that difference in the way services are provided. That oftentimes you live in an area, as a person with a disability, you live in an area that has one provider that does one or two things. And if you don't do that, you don't get anything.
And you just get what you get, right? That's kind of the way that the system works, I think. So it's like, well, be grateful for what you have, because there's not a lot of money. You know, I think that's the narrative that we hear all the time.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, so where can people go to, again, give the website or whatever contact information people need for getting signed on to your petition and your list of allies?
Yeah, so you can go on our website, selfadvocacyalliance.org. And there's a form that you can fill out, and you can sign the petition right online. And if your agency or a group, an advocacy group or agency, small business, anyone wants to become an ally, they can email me, tara@tara.advocacy@gmail.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michael Johnson and Tara Wicke of the Illinois Self-Advocacy Alliance. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com, or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week.